Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture and to remind viewers that entertainment is not mindless.
Welcome to Real World Theology, episode 106. On this episode of the podcast, we are talking about Suicide Squad. To help me do that is James Harleman from Cinemagogue. Also joining us both is Alexis Johnson, a Real World contributor and founder of Real Cathedrals. So we have plenty to talk about. Suicide Squad gives us the chance to have a discussion about a trend that only seems to be growing and is incredibly prominent in 2016, and that's the polarization of critics and audiences. So we talk about the role of a critic, how we determine how we see films. We talk about Suicide Squad a little, and mainly if our panel has ever truly seen a bad movie. In the meantime, go to realworldtheology.com, find more notes on this show, join our Facebook discussion group, subscribe to the podcast, leave us feedback, rate and review the show, tell your friends, and let's get more people involved in the conversation. Anyway, we have another really great show for you this time, so here it is, episode 106, Suicide Squad and Critical Consensus. Anyway, it's like, yeah. Anyway, doesn't matter. But I'm glad you're both here. I can only assume that to some degree both of you have followed the social media mayhem that has been going on since probably last Thursday.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I'd go back maybe. I think the true yes, this one. But really,
this time.
It's just the latest. It's just the latest flurry of the megastorm.
That's crazy.
I'm so perplexed, and stepping back, and well, we'll get into it, right?
That's the thing, right? I mean, it seems like as we've done all too often this year, especially like with film. I mean, like there's plenty of reasons for people to get up in arms on social media or up in arms, especially during a political season. It seems like that somehow has bled to our particular realm, right? So in film, like we have to talk about the talk that's surrounding the film before we can actually talk about the film itself.
Yeah.
So I mean, we're all gathered to talk about Suicide Squad, and Alexis, I'm not sure where you land, but I know James, I saw you coming out and give some opinions on it, and I have made no secret of how I felt about the film. Known so in different creative ways. But I mean, Suicide Squad is the latest, you know, big budget. Well, I mentioned a big budget, but you know, summer blockbustery superhero film. I mean, it broke all kinds of records for August releases. It made like $135 million at the box office this weekend. It's getting all of our money. I mean, we all saw it. So when it's setting these records and making an impression, people are going to see it. I don't know how long people will go to see it, but people are going to see it. It's currently also not only setting these records, but being reviled by professional critics. It seems like the gold standard, which I think we all have some issues with, Rotten Tomatoes, it's sitting at 26% with the critics on Rotten Tomatoes. Whereas on the other hand, it's sitting at, I don't remember the last time I checked, but it's around 70-72% with the audience. A group of people that I'll refer to as the fans, you know, that,
I don't know if I'll agree with that, but go on.
Really? Okay.
It could also be the mass audience.
The mass.
Instead of the niche of real fans.
Okay. So then two questions.
Yeah.
To get this started, and Alexis, I'll let you start because ladies first. and both of you are on Skype and using my Skype guest goes first. And so a tiebreaker goes to the ladies. So where did you land on this film? You know, were you closer to the movie going audience or were you closer to the critic audience? Kind of, what, where do you think that divide is?
Oh, yeah. Well, I did give yesterday. I saw it yesterday. So, yeah. I went on Twitter last night and did give a little bit of my opinion about it. My issues with the film span into a larger issue with Hollywood and actually the audience, too. So that's a gets a little bit more philosophical at that point.
But there are, but you're saying there are issues.
There are definitely issues with this movie. Okay. But I'm also not the type to be like, it's the worst thing I ever saw. Like, no, that's not how I feel about it. But I would say, I guess, technically, I am leaning more towards the critic side. But I think the critics have a way of criticizing lately that's kind of ridiculous. It's very overdramatic. And I guess they've always done that. But I read that thing that Mark posted in our group. And it was just so, like, the words and everything, it was just so over the top, adjectives, negative. It was just, like, one of the craziest things I've read where I'm like, is this kind of a spoof or a satire?
Which thing did he post?
It was the first, it was before you guys went to see it. He posted someone's review of it, and it was, like, this scathing, you know, visceral review of this film. And it was just a little over the top. So I think part of that, it's hard to take that seriously. So I usually blow that kind of stuff off. But I do watch it, you know, from the point of view of not only a film lover, but of someone who has studied this and wants to go into this industry that, yeah. So I would say I lean more to them as far as their criticisms of the film, you know, the ones that are level-headed, but not this seething rage, anger, scathing, like, commentary on it. No, not at all. And I think, and I am a fan of anything nerdy, obviously, and I love the DC universe just as much as the Marvel one. I'm not really, like, either or on those. So I think it had a lot of potential, but it was just, it raised a bar. It just really failed to meet. That was my... Sorry, the short version.
Sure. Well, okay. Well, I'll ask you this as a clarifying question. How much of it would you say that you enjoy, or did you get any enjoyment from the film at all? Or was it, I mean, because you're describing it as like a standard that the film couldn't reach, or the bar was too high, or it sounds like you're dancing around saying that like it was well below expectations. But was there anything that you did enjoy from it?
Yeah, I would say so. I thought the look of it was really unique. I enjoyed the way the use of color, the use of cinematography, some of the visual symbolism was really cool. I liked Diablo a lot. He was actually my favorite, even though everyone's like kind of more into Harley and Deadshot, but I liked him a lot. And yeah, so there were things I liked about it. I think the cast is great. I think they just were handed not very good material. The writing was really bad because the story was a mess and the dialogue was really shoddy, but it wasn't their fault. Like, I think if handed something better, that cast was a great cast that could have really delivered even more, you know what I mean? So that's kind of where I stand as far as that. If it was that what you were asking?
Yeah.
I liked about it. Okay.
So like I said, the reactions have been very polarizing. It seems like very few people have landed in the middle. So you're saying that you kind of lean towards the critics' assessment of the film, and so I'm like, okay, well, you're using language that says you're on the critic side or leaning towards the critic side, but like, where is the middle ground that you're finding? And you're saying, okay, yes, there's some pieces in place that I could respect, I could enjoy, that like I saw potential in, and that wasn't awful or the worst ever. So you know, that's kind of where I was hoping that you would go. To prove that, you know, it wasn't like a total throwaway, you know, so that yes, you did answer the question. To answer your question of my question with a really long answer to the question. So, so James, so
I'm lost.
Well, so that was my analogy for how I thought the story was structured, in a complete mess of an answer. So James, basically same question, like, you know, kind of what were your expectations? Where did you come out once the film was over? And, you know, which do you lean towards one? Are you in the middle? Like, where are you at?
I'm in the middle for sure, although I think I lean more the other way. And, okay. And here's – I was poking around all the different weird reviews. I found some that were maybe – I found one that was a little less polarizing, and I found mm-hmm. one that definitely was I did some digging today just to prep for chatting about it, and I wanted to read a couple of quotes here and just throw these at you to sort of help illuminate kind of where my brain's at in this. Because honestly, I'm leaning toward it, and the film is actually having a small effect on me, which I think is a small form of repentance, which we'll talk about later. But listen to this quote. I think it's fascinating. It says, "The chocolate bar is a marvelous sweet that does not need to pretend to be a chocolate souffle. Musical comedies are wonderful entertainment without trying to compete with opera. Blue jeans are a perfect garment that shouldn't be compared with haute couture. There are times when you would much rather have a really good hot dog than any steak, but you can still recognize that one is junk food and the other isn't." I found that a fascinating quote to think about. And then somebody else who actually wasn't disparaging it, who wasn't disparaging a movie too much, but says this, said, "Attending to this is a lot like reading the middle of a comic book. It was like reading the middle of a comic book. It's amusing in fitful patches, but you're likely to find more beauty, suspense, discipline, craft, and art when watching a New York Harbor pilot bring the Queen Elizabeth II into her Hudson River berth," which is what this movie most reminds me of. It's a big, expensive, time-consuming, essentially mechanical operation and about as personal as a Christmas card from a bank. Now, here is the trick, because I have tricked you. Both those quotes are from 1980 regarding The Empire Strikes Back.
I'm tricked.
But I was digging around and just thinking about, you know, the same things. That where am I at with this movie? I think Harrison Ford and Alec Guinness saved Star Wars from horrible writing and dialogue in the first film. I think John Williams' score saved it from a lot of things. I don't think that Suicide Squad has John Williams or some of George Lucas's direction or some of the – and I don't think any of the actors quite elevate it out of the mires that certain aspects of the Star Wars films might have been. But I love the idea of junk food, because to me, I'm going to confess, on Rotten Tomatoes, Resident Evil, the first one, just talking about the first one from 2002, is sitting at 33%. I love that movie. The Expendables also is The Expendables 2, also not a movie anybody can probably even remember the characters' names, let alone motivations of. And I love both those movies. And I really think Suicide Squad felt like the losers of the Expendables dropped into Raccoon City facing a crisis like in Resident Evil. And you know what? Sometimes I'm just good with that. So that's where I fall.
Okay. So what it sounds like you're saying is that the movie's not very good, but you enjoyed it.
Well, I don't know. I've had an incredible hot dog.
Okay.
That doesn't make it steak. And I think sometimes there's apples and oranges here. Like, no, I enjoyed the heck out of it. I'm going to own it. You know what? I'm going to own it on a Blu-ray, and I'm probably going to watch different scenes with characters and a few of the fights over and over again. And this is from a guy who confessedly doesn't own a single Terrence Malick film. So yeah, that says something. There was a rewatch of it. I'm probably going to go see it with friends next week who haven't seen it yet. So it will get at least a little more ticket money in the second week of release. But because it was a good time. You know, I mean, my brother and I went and saw Marvel Universe Live this year. I don't know if you've heard about that. It's sort of a stunt show / sort of live event that they do with it's Captain America and Hawkeye and Spider-Man and a bunch of – you know what? I went to an Aqua Sox game. That's a baseball team up here. And they had a fireworks show, and it was Star Wars night, and they had – Sith choreographed fighting with Jedi. Like there's a time and place for all sorts of different things. When I'm going to a demo derby, I don't expect Shakespeare, you know. And I think that some people have a certain amount of expectations wrapped up in these characters, or that's why I'm not sure that it's fans or the diehard fans necessarily that are saying they love this movie any more than I'll be honest. And this may be where I'm repenting a little bit. I've been just as heated and scathing and ranting and raving about The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and the old Keanu Reeves Constantine movies because I was a diehard fan of those trade paperbacks and the original comics, and it was so radically reinterpreted that I felt like it had somehow, that I was entitled to something different. But I think that phrase speaks to something too.
But was it just the reinterpretation in those films, or was it the quality of movie that it was?
Well, I would love to say, in the case of Constantine, I'd love to say that it was just the reinterpretation. I would love to say it's both. But my friend, a friend I actually know who actually writes for Marvel and DC Comics, actually confessed he likes the Constantine movie and challenged me to go watch it again. So it's an interesting time to look back and kind of say, well, wait a minute, if this wasn't about certain characters or attached to a franchise, I mean, like so many crazy things coming out about this movie. People are saying, this needs to save the DC franchise. Okay, it was never going to meet that expectation. We got a movie that's purportedly about a bunch of the BC and D-list bad guys running around. None of the previews made me think this was going to be a highbrow film of any kind. I was hoping it would be as fun as Kick-Ass, which it wasn't, but it was certainly a heck of a lot better than Kick-Ass, too.
Well, okay, so... You're talking, well, I feel like there's a lot of things there that probably need a bit of unpacking, which is what I was telling you guys, that we would probably have to talk about the critical reception of this film in light of what we've seen happen over and over and over again. James, you've put this this analogy out there that about steak versus like a hot dog. Or sure. as a great theologian on Facebook said, sometimes I want a steak from Daniel's, sometimes I want a greasy Johnny Rockets burger. This nice. Was a messy burger.
That's a brilliant guy. I don't know who that was.
So I get that. I mean, that's the reason that I enjoyed the Warcraft movie this year. But I made sure that I specifically said in our review, in my written review, in a podcast review, I said, this was not a good movie, but it was good enough, and I enjoyed it. But I don't expect most people to enjoy it. That's like I said, that's my Starship Troopers. That's my Expendables 2. I love the Expendables 2, but I think, you know, overall, it's a terrible movie, except for the fact that I cared about most of the characters, which is something that I can't say about a movie like this, which is where I think there's room for... objectivity instead of subjectivity. And when I say that, I say that critics absolutely can get a reputation, often from their extensive library of the films they viewed, and often like some external education, to being these snobs when it comes to determining what's, you know, quote good or quote bad in the film world. And I totally get that. That's, you know, that's like the Malick versus the Marvel, right? That you were kind of alluding to. But is there no place for people who are trained in a particular field, in this case, film criticism, just like any other profession, to have an opinion that stands a little above the untrained eye? Does it matter? And if it doesn't, then why do we even have critics? I mean, I don't tell my accountant, if my accountant says, you know, that's probably not the best thing to do with your money, I guess I'm free to say, well, I feel like I want to put my money here instead. And he's like, well, I guess you can, but that doesn't make it a good thing to do with your money. Like, we don't talk back to other professionals like that. So are critics just worthless, or do they, so that's a tough question, because I think people would say they are. And right now, with the backlash we're getting, just to extend this question out even further with caveats, it's creating a backlash. There is now a 26-72 split on what an audience likes and what critics like. And furthermore, not that I bemoan any of these podcasts, I actually would recommend them, but there's a number of podcasts that are popping up, like Aaron White, who's been on the show, his Feel and Film podcast. Another friend of the show, Chad Hopkins, just started Cinescope. And these podcasts are specifically saying, critics make me sad for liking the movies that I like. So I'm going to start a podcast and just talk about what makes movies fun, or what makes me connect with films, even if they're not perfect. Let's just say positive about film. So... like I said, and so it seems like this backlash. And I want there to be some middle ground where we can respect what critics do, and we can also be semi-positive, because we can realize that sometimes we are in the mood for a hot dog, right? I mean, a great hot dog, hopefully, not just like a hot dog that we found on the ground that fell out of its bun and is covered in ants, but a good hot dog. So, I mean, Alexis, I feel like you probably have opinions about critics based on nothing that I've ever talked to you about before. So, I mean, so again, to kind of bring my question back 100 or full force, is it possible to have a good or a bad movie? Are critics worthless?
Oh God, you might be asking the wrong person this question. Well, I don't think they're worthless. I think they shouldn't be paid necessarily to do what they do. I've thought that always. And I mean, Roger Ebert, rest his soul, I disagreed with that man so much. And yet he was just like elevated to this status of like, okay, yeah, he's just, that's personal. But as far as he was elevated as like his opinion means is like determines. And this is something I noticed working at a theater, particularly with the older generation. They will go to any movie, doesn't matter what it is, depending on who's in it and what the critic says about it in the local, especially a local critic. And I worked at a theater where it was predominantly senior citizens because it was the art house cinema and indie films. So there was a lot, most, those are the kind of films seniors go to mainly here in Phoenix where they're in abundance, and they will watch anything. And when Tree of Life came out, and I like Terrence Malick, even though that's not my personal favorite of his, they just went because the critics said it was great. And because there was, yeah, Sean Penn and Brad Pitt or whatever, and they all came out, oh, that was the worst show I've ever seen. And it was just like the whole time, because they didn't do the research themselves about what kind of movie it was like what to expect. They were just like, oh, so-and-so gave it 5 stars or what, I don't know, you know, whatever. Then that means it's good. And I think that's the problem with criticism is people, and that's why like I've kind of started to write off Rotten Tomatoes, because I'm just so sick of looking at that and seeing the wars and hearing all this conflict. I'm like, just watch it yourself. Read reviews if you want to. That's your own choice, but don't let that be what determines you from going to see a film or not necessarily. Like, stay open-minded about it. I think being open-minded is more important than being positive about the film, because it's okay to criticize something. I think you need to be a little bit more balanced, but, you know, not just use extreme language as far as, you know, all that goes. But I don't think critics are useless. I just think they shouldn't be paid and they shouldn't be elevated for their opinion. I think it's more, art is so, is subjective. And I think people need to be open-minded themselves and listen to their own likes and dislikes first and foremost. And then if you do decide, hey, my good friend who knows me well says I wouldn't like this, maybe I'll skip it and wait till DVD or something. You know, that's a little bit different. I did want to address something that James brought up before I forget, about the whole hot dog analogy regarding Suicide Squad. I do agree that that applies to a lot of films, you know, as far as, you know, what's junk food and what isn't, like we know. But I think for me, and why some people are getting angry about the comic book films being like this, is that you kind of expect that from a film that isn't going to have the best story or that doesn't really have that great of characters or whatever. But the comic book films have great characters and they have great stories. So the expectation, I think, is a little bit more merited or whatever. It's just, or warranted. Sorry, I had a long day because you do expect more than just a popcorn flick. I do, because I know these are characters that have been heroes for decades. You know, they will live on forever. They're legends. And I do expect a better story and I do expect better treatment of those characters. So when you see a film like Suicide Squad, you know, it could be so much better, even though, yeah, they are the kind of B-list villains, but the potential from their source material and from what they could be is evident there. So it feels like you're watching this kind of waiting for something to happen to push that bar to go there. And it never does. That I couldn't really say that about. I mean, I liked League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, but I would say, yeah, for many reasons, that's just a fun movie for me, and I don't have that expectation of it that you might have had, knowing I never read the comic books. But as far as Suicide Squad goes, and Batman versus Superman, which I actually did like, but I did expect more from that because it's Wonder Woman, it's Batman, and I want to go there to those dark places with them and dig into their characters and to their potential and, you know, what their stories could tell. Okay, I'm done. But yeah, that was just something that came to mind why you said that.
No. Which is interesting. Which is, well, you know, I'll be bold here and say, by way of segue, I liked this. I think I enjoyed this more than Batman versus Superman. Which is a unique thing to say, and you know, but that film has plenty of hatred on itself. So I mean, I didn't hate it. I had issues with it. I think because you know what, when we're talking about Superman and we're talking about Bruce Wayne, I do expect a certain, and the fact that we've seen, you know, Christopher Nolan and others handle the material so deftly, depending on your view, but. Mm-hmm. I think a standard has been set. When we're talking about Captain Boomerang, I mean, I'm just like really? Like, and this is where I guess that's where going in to talk about the critics thing. I think there are a small core of critics and particular types of fans that I think are skewing it so in such a polarized manner. I mean, let's be fair. 70 is like a 70 something is a C. So the people who are saying that, you know, people who are giving it the higher grade aren't giving it an A+. I mean, like, nobody's given this a pass. Like, it's a 4-star flick by any stretch. Yeah. On it, it's not a 4-star hot dog. But it's fascinating to me. I don't think critics are useless, but I think that probably I think we had a culture where somebody like Ebert was useful, and I won't disagree. I probably disagreed with him 50% of the time, but I got to know him enough to know when I would disagree with him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so there was in one sense a relationship, just like I have with my friend Dean. We go see a movie, you know, we differ as much as we agree, but I kind of then know it's like, oh he liked this, I'm probably gonna hate it. Oh, he didn't like this, I'm probably gonna like this. You know, I know that after a time. And I don't think we have people who, I mean, I don't think this is any different from our journalism. I don't read any journalism now that isn't op-ed. I don't see critics divorcing themselves from their biases any more than I see journalists with political situations. I mean, I'm looking right now at Rotten Tomatoes, and I'm looking at Tron, which is dear to my heart. I'm looking at Tron, the original classic, and the critics' consensus is 70%. Now, I want to say that movie is awesome, just like I want to say the 30th anniversary of Transformers the movie and with the death of Optimus Prime is a phenomenal piece of art, but. Like both these things are at the 30-year mark. And listen to the critics' consensus, though. Perhaps not as strong dramatically as it is technologically. Tron is an original and visual. It's just like, all right, we admit the editing, the acting, and the story all suck, but at least it did something small. It made a jump for animation, so we're going to say it's awesome. Like, no, it's because these critics grew up with it now. And I read the same reviews that I'm reading for Suicide Squad. Mm-hmm. I read some of these same lines in regard to Ghostbusters. No character development, this problem, that problem, et cetera, et cetera. But, and it's at 73% because of political reasons. Richard Roper, I think, got eviscerated, and others because they dared to say, I don't hate it for all the weird reasons certain people are, but I just don't think it's a good movie. And actually, mm-hmm. people were threatening them. I mean, it's just like we're in a ridiculous age where our culture has shifted to where critics – and not just critics alone, but certain forms of trying to be even-handed seem to be worthless. Like, it's not working.
Well, yeah, we're signing petitions to shut down Rotten Tomatoes.
And so it's curious to me just to see some of that. I don't think they're worthless, but I did think I expected this to be a C-list movie because it was about C-list DC characters, and I have no problem. I'm sure we can cite a lot of problems. I just wish that I would see some cogent argumentation online. I mean, people are complaining, you know, all this hype about the Joker, and he was only in it 10 minutes. Well, you know what? There was a movie called Godzilla, and he was only in it 9, and I was a little disappointed about that. But you know, I think sometimes even the press tours are creating a strange environment to where people don't feel like they were satisfied with what they were promised. That everything around the movie is actually detracting from enjoying the movie. And just if you heard there was a dumb movie with a bunch of, let's face it, except for the Joker and Harley, most people hadn't heard of these characters unless they were maybe Arrow watchers.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly
enough, Arrow, as bad as it is, on this, you know, as we've talked, James, Arrow made me care about most of these C-list villains more than Suicide Squad did.
And that's fair. I mean, it's fair to say that. I didn't like Arrow's Deadshot. That was when I started checking out of the show. Mm-hmm. And so for me, this was fun. I've seen weird arguments, and that's just what's strange to me. Mm-hmm. I think people are coming in with a sense of weird entitlement. People were talking about Batman. I read one. Somebody's just like, Batman's thrown into it for no reason whatsoever. Like, wait a minute. Yeah. I mean, like, this happens. I just read an issue, like my latest issue of Power Man and Iron Fist. Spider-Woman shows up sort of watching them from a rooftop to make a joke about the fact that Luke Cage got his shirt ripped off. And then that's her sole purpose in the story.
Well, if we want to level equal criticism or to some credence to some people's criticism, that would be exactly the kind of argument you could levy against a Marvel film, right? Someone shows up for 2 minutes and it's not really necessary, but it's cool when Marvel does it and it's not cool when DC does it.
Well, and exactly. And I think some people don't understand the medium that's being adapted because, you know, as a reader of Astro City and some other comic, like, we're talking about a world of heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Batman is effectively Gotham's police. So, you know, in a movie where the police show up in a flashback, do I get upset that Officer 3 didn't have his own character arc? I mean, this is a world where there's superheroes everywhere. So the fact that you get the Flash for a minute, you know, showing up, stopping Captain Boomerang, people are just like, oh, they obviously just did that to tease out his movie. It's like, now this stuff happens in comics all the time. So give me, if you want to complain about the editing, you want to complain about the acting, like, I get it. There's reason and margin to say this, you know, this person phoned it in. Will Smith was being Will Smith, whatever. Those seem more like real arguments versus just some of the crazy. It's just kind of blowing my mind.
Okay. Well then before we get too far off the kind of original line of thinking, is a professional critic, James, what role does a professional critic have? Alexis thinks they need to not get paid and thinks they and their family should starve to death. But
that's not exactly what I said.
what role does the critic have? What role do they serve? I mean, they've gone to film school. They've learned everything there is to know about making a film, and they've watched thousands and thousands of movies, and they have tried to say objectively, there is this, and objectively there is that. Have they just wasted their time? Should we even be listening to critics?
I don't think they've wasted their time. I think that one, their role should be more level setting expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know what, there are certain things I don't go to a lot of football games. I'm not a big football guy. So it's like, you know what, this, you know, you're not if a movie is like that, like, I'm not going to enjoy it. Like, if movies are like certain things, like, what am I getting into? Does it have a lot of fun for people who just like circuses, but it has really terrible editing? Like, okay, well, you can point that out. Just be like, you know what, if you're a big story guy, you're probably going to get ruffled by the fact that there's so many plot holes. If you're big, you know, they letting people know what they're getting into, like, that's really helpful. Just the facts. Just stick to the facts. I think the minute you get into, and I think, you know, I think sometimes a critic can recommend it, like recommending a movie because it really speaks to something of value. Sure, well, that sounds fascinating too.
But that's subjective as well, right?
Well, if it's addressing a certain political issue or illuminating or it's talking about moral virtues, at least you're letting people like, hey, this film really gets into that type of thing. It's like, oh, well, wow, this sounds like it's very philosophical. It sounds like we might have great conversations coming out with my friends afterwards. Those are things where it seems like it could be helpful. And also getting back to something where there's a grading system the aggregator obviously isn't working, but it really seems like it is, I don't think anybody is doing it. It's, you look at the climate and it is 0 stars or 5 stars. Like there's nothing in between. Like could we just.
Unless you follow me on Letterboxd and you realize everything is 3 or 3.5 stars. Follow me at Letterboxd.com.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so let me just ask a straightforward, flat out question. Alexis, is there such thing as a bad movie?
Well, I think so. I mean, you can be objective. I think all art is mostly subjective, and obviously it's a matter of taste and personal preference, I would say, first and foremost. But there's also, I mean, art requires, it does require some kind of parameters. You know, you have to use certain methods, use certain tools, you have to have certain skills. So I do think those things can be measured or quantified, but you can't, as far as like the content and all that, that's a little bit, that's the gray area, I guess. But you can say objectively, like, we know what bad dialogue is because it's unrealistic, or, you know, there's ways of measuring things like that. There's ways of measuring the writing, the editing, you know, you can look at that stuff and I think give the criticism if it's a bad movie. But you could also say it's a bad movie because it has a heavy-handed message in it, or, you know, things like that too. So I don't know.
But what I'm hearing you're saying, Alexis, is you're not saying, you're actually not describing, based on the conversation we've already had, you're not describing a bad movie. You're describing a hot dog movie. Which we have already said isn't necessarily bad, because, like I said, the dialogue in Expendables 2 is awful. The story is so simple it's kind of dumb, you know. Like it's I would say that it's a bad movie that I enjoy, but we're saying that it's just a different kind of supper for a different kind of person, which means that technically, like I said, I'm trying to see if we can actually not straddle this fence. I would say that I realize that things are mostly subjective, but I think at some level there can be criticism leveled against a film that it is bad. Now you can tell me you enjoy a film that is bad, but you can't tell me a bad film is great just because you enjoy it. You can tell me you enjoy it and you recognize it's bad. Which is why I think a lot of the reviews are almost everyone who is coming out to say that they enjoyed this film on some level. It seems like every review or Facebook or social media, Twitter, whatever comment starts with, well, it's not perfect, but you know, just say, yeah, it's not very good. Yeah. It's not a good film, but you enjoyed it, but you learned something from it. But then again, does that, where is that needle? Where does it go from you learn something and it makes it good? Because like I said, you're throwing around a lot of these little ideas that make a film good or bad, but then we're also arguing the same thing to say that those things are purely subjective and can't make it bad. Like James saying, like, yeah, the editing's not the best, but it's not going to ruin it. It's not going to make it a bad film. If you wanted to see these characters in a certain way, well, that's not the film we were making. So we're making this film. So it's actually a really good, this film. You know, it's like watching Evil Dead or something. You're like, there's a lot of terrible things in Evil Dead, but it's also kind of brilliant, especially in context. So,
well, and there you have a problem with even like you could say it's bad. How can you say it's a bad film? Because it's now used in classes, Evil Dead, for instance. It's the technical aspects of things that he did, not unlike going back to Orson Welles and Citizen Kane. Like the groundbreaking things that he did technically are now used in film classes. So when I say, can I just say it's a bad film, or do I need to say things like, you know, it is bad technically, the editing's bad, et cetera, et cetera. Or this, you know, it's like, you know, these the performances are not believable. Like these are just people going through the motions. There's no heart or real look of interest in. I mean, I'd say that about the Star Wars prequels, right? Man, I mean, even Liam Neeson just sort of meanders through the scenery.
He's like, I hope I die. This is awful.
You know, there's, and and you know what? And my people are going to argue with me about the Star Wars prequels. So I can say aspects are bad, but I guess when you land and just say bad all over, or when you just then declare bad, I guess that's where it gets a little strange. Because you're like, you know what? There are plenty of, I mean, you think about it. Is there a place for cheesy one-liners? Is there a place for melodrama versus naturalistic acting? Like, and what were we expecting? Like, none of this acting is. I don't believe that these are real people. Am I supposed to believe they're real people? there's just those questions that I find myself asking myself.
So then the direct question is, James, have you ever seen a bad movie?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
But which films?
There's very little. There's, you know what? I learned, and yet, no, I'll even qualify that. I used to think that the original Clash of the Titans was just a cinematic tour de force, probably because I saw it when I was 7. I don't know. also because I didn't realize till we revisited it with a big party of friends that it was PG, but there was toplessness in it. That was awkward. It had the worst acting, a plot that just went reversed back on itself 2-3 times and didn't make a lick of sense. And the only thing, but you know what? It's a bad film, all except for it is a wonder to still watch Ray Harryhausen's amazing stop motion animation. Mm-hmm. And for that alone, it's worth having a party for. So I can't say it's bad in 5 out of 6 categories, but it's also beautiful in one. So,
well, yeah, that's the point I'm trying to make, why I can't straddle the fence, Mikey, as you were saying, is that I don't think anyone, I mean, I guess I shouldn't, well, I watch Mystery Science Theater. I know this isn't true, but there, it's hard to say that the entire film is bad, but I guess, never mind. Just kidding. You can, but it's kind of,
there are full misfires. I think there are full misfires that most people even like there's.
You're still using words like most.
Not a lot of takers for Halle Berry's Catwoman, right? I mean,
oh god, I had to watch that on a plane.
You're just like, why can't there be snakes?
Oh right, that would have been more entertaining. But no, I guess my question is, what qualifies? Because why I'm having a hard time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think
what qualifies a bad movie? Like a wholly bad movie. What qualifies that?
So and I guess that's what I kind of want us to acknowledge, because I thought about this a lot, and I've tried to, in different ways with different people through different mediums, tried to have this discussion on some level. And I think the best I can hope for is to realize that we all are hypocrites. maybe that's as good as I can hope for, because on one hand, when we get down to it, especially when we start defending movies we like, we see movies as purely subjective, meaning that we're bringing our emotions and our experiences to a film and almost projecting that on how other people should enjoy the film. But at the same time, I have not found a single person that I've had a conversation with who has never seen a bad movie. So in one breath, they say, you are not allowed to say movies are bad. You have to see the good in them. You have to be positive. You have to be optimistic. And you have to, you know, you have to realize that they all have good pieces in them somewhere. And on the other hand, they said, except for this movie over here, which is bad. And I'm like, okay, I find that there's a place for critics. I think James actually, you didn't stay on it too long, but I think you hit on what I would love to see. And that is something that I found long ago, because I realized that people kept pointing me to Roger Ebert as like the god of criticism. And sure, he did a lot of things, but he is not my personal hero as a critic, because I often found myself at least 50% of the time disagreeing with him. I think he was a fantastic writer. And it was way more interesting reading his reviews. So I don't want to like be too down on Roger Ebert for all the Ebert fans, but I didn't agree with him very much. So I did what James is talking about. I have people in my life who I know if I go and see a movie and I'm sitting there and I am like, I'm almost physically in tears because the movie is so bad that when I go talk to friend X, they're going to be like, oh my goodness, I just saw, I don't know, it's Donald Trump. I just saw this film. It was the best. They're like, oh, it was the most amazing movie I've seen this year, or it was so good. And I'm like, I just knew that was going to happen. At the same time, I have people and or critics. Like, there's people who have other podcasts, there's people who look at film in similar ways that we do, and say, this movie was really great. It had some of this and this. But overall, it was a really good movie. I think you'll enjoy it. And I'm like, yes, I think I will enjoy it because we tend to see eye to eye. You know, it's the same person who I can enjoy an indie film with, but they also are enjoying the Marvel films. They're also enjoying Pacific Rim, for all the incredible fun and technical merit that it has. So I think the best advice that I can ever give anyone is to find people that like the same things that you do, and weigh their criticism appropriately, especially if they're a professional film critic and they know what they're talking about, so they can articulate why they do or do not like a particular film. Also, find the people that you disagree with the most, and make sure that you're always keeping an eye on why they dislike film, because you may find that the different, like, there's a reason that you grab, like, because you'll learn more about yourself, not because, like, you're going to find that you agree with them one day, but you're probably going to learn more about what attracts you to film. And as the mission of the podcast, to find out kind of why we connect with certain stories, I think you can learn a lot by understanding what type of films that you're attracted to, what type of films that you're not attracted to. You know, oh, I don't like horror because, you know, I get that it can be a great look into this thing because I read people that I disagree with, but at the same time, I realize it's not for me. Or I realize that comedies don't do a lot for me because there tends to be a little bit of raunchiness or off-color humor, and that's not really my bag. So I realize that they're usually playing a satire of some kind of societal trope that needs to be examined more closely, but not for me, you know. So find somebody that you really agree with and find somebody you really disagree with and weigh them accordingly. Understand that maybe a film can be bad, but not bad to everybody. I know we walk a fine line at Real World Theology because we review good movies and bad movies. Mostly we review just popular movies. Because even though I do think some films personally are bad, I think that every film, if it tells a story, which 99.9% of films do, to better or worse degrees, they have the ability to connect with us, whether they're done poorly or done, you know, Oscar worthy, whatever that means. Mm. So every film has value that doesn't make it good.
Not to, yeah. And I guess that's where I got a little recentered, and it wasn't Suicide Squad that did it initially, although it's just continued apparently pouring gasoline on the really huge fire.
Gosh, but, yes.
But, you know what, I watched a video, I won't tell the whole story, but I watched a video with a guy who was moved to tears by an aspect of the plot of Batman vs. Superman I thought was cheesy. And I kind of went back to the whole
heart. Was his mom named Martha?
What?
Was his mom named Martha? Was that what it was?
Yeah, yeah. And like some, just the idea of these characters that he grew up with and then thinking about himself and others in his life who forget that we have a shared origin, like moved him to tears, or aspects of our origin of this, you know what it, you know, however weird that gets you there. It's like, I'm seeing this guy who's moved to tears by this.
And yeah.
Remembering, you know what? In Acts 17, Paul didn't say, as some of your own poets have said in that bad poetry, but I guess I'll quote it anyway. You know, I mean, like that's not, or, and he doesn't also say, you know, as some of your own poets, but only the best ones, because this guy is truly artful, unlike the other crap. You know, I mean, like that's, he doesn't, he's picking out something that, that is a connection point, which was the whole heart of Cinemagogue, and that really not the, the truest form of film criticism. It's really like, well, and it doesn't mean be positive all the time, but it's like, yeah, where if things are moving people, I find that fascinating. If people are moved by Batman Superman, well, you know what? My goodness, thank God it's out there. I know a gal who came to faith, who went back to church, recommitted her life to Christ, and is now a wonderful Christian because of Event Horizon. All right? I mean,
that
like
would
that,
do it.
Right? That doesn't...
It'll so scare that, well, the Jesus into you.
And so that, right. And so, you know what? Lots of people can talk about Paul Anderson films and yet at the same time, Paul Thomas, right? I mean, there's a couple of those Andersons, but... And nobody, so then we come back to that interesting question, like what makes it a bad or a good, to me, like, well, I have a category to say it's a good film because it accomplished something good. But am I saying it's a, technically, it is it a, you know, does it have flaws, whatever, like sure, we can talk about it. So even, and when I say good, like, are we even hearing from each other the same words when we say those words? Like when you say it's a bad film and I'm just like, no, this moment made me cry and made me think of my father, or just like, oh my goodness, well then. Okay, your category, you're hearing the word good, and it means something very different to what I'm talking about. And and my goodness, I guess especially as a Christian, I guess part of me is looking at the climate thing. There's a difference between our public and our private discourse. I mean, we're doing a podcast, right? Everybody can hear it. So, right? I mean, that's very different from you and me talking about. Like, I could mock you and just be like, dude, I thought Mud sucked. You know, or something like that. And like, we could poke fun at each other. And that's, we have at least a measure of relationship. And yet when I throw those things out into public on my Facebook feed or whatever, or my podcast, like, my goodness, well, nobody knows what I'm really, nobody has context. And if their context is different, they could be extremely hurt. And I just, like, especially as a Christian, I just, First Timothy 2, it's like, I think I see Christian to Christian arguing about aspects of this film that are either subjective or simply the artistic and not the, we could get into moral content. Sure. Maybe there's some good room for some even heated debate. I get that we got to refine that stuff, but some of the debate just about art and whether they truly captured the character and the yelling and screaming, even amongst people who seem to be Christians, like, guys, First Timothy 2, man, like, can we do, I mean, let's save the quarreling and divisiveness for, you know, heresy. Not whether or not, you know, Jared Leto was as good a Joker as Jack Nicholson. Like, it's a come on.
Well, actually, I think that's the funny thing too, because when you start getting into that, you want to make those statements that say, let's save the real arguing for what matters. And I think too oftentimes, people have very subjective versions of what really matters. You know, it's if that wasn't the case, we wouldn't have so many denominations, right? I mean, if we were just like, well, let's save it for heresy, like, levels of heresy obviously have been subjective throughout the church history. So, you know, some degrees we would say that's a bad reason. Like, that is just a bad reason to split a church. While they're like, no, subjectively, this is a great reason. to split this church, so it's even tough. You know, I would like to be there with you, James, and draw that line in the sand. But I've just seen, you know, people are different, and that's a beautiful thing. And what it does is it makes it really hard to connect. So I like what you're saying about, you know, there's no context, and I think social media makes everything more difficult.
It really does. Yeah. I guess though I could, you know what, if you and I divided over, Mikey, if you and I or Alexis and I divided over head coverings, at least I would still have a category for why that mattered versus were Batman's ears long enough. You know, I mean, like, that, there's still, like, one is, I think what it does is, I think at least for Christians, like, maybe as Christians, some of us need to take a step back. And I'm a big fan. I mean, come on, goodness. I host cosplay competitions where we're all dressed as Gotham characters. Like, I'm guilty of this, getting inflamed about, incited about some of this stuff. But I mean, that's what I say. For some of me, it's this moment of repentance a little bit. Like, guys, we need to save that for at least, you know, even if it's the dumb parts of scripture that were to, with bad eisegesis, one of us is doing. At least that's still scripture. Like, come on, mm-hmm. guys. Like, there's, or, you know, if we're talking about issues of modesty in the film, if we're talking about biblical categories of application, that's one thing. If suddenly Batman is important to me as whether or not they did, how well they depicted Christ, like, wait a minute, we've just revealed a sacred cow.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's finish this piece of the discussion up. And I tried and tried and tried to think of a clever way to ask you this question, James, so that it would just make you want to explain this, but I'm not going to. I'm just going to ask it directly. And I think that you've explained on the Real World Theology discussion group more than once, I believe, your kind of useful critic metric, or your Rotten Tomatoes metric, or theory or ideology. And I would love, I think it's a pretty good way to not throw the baby out with the Rotten Tomatoes. And you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a split difference mentality. I mean, I think when I'm looking at – when I go see a film and I go and it seems like user and reviewer scores are within about 10% of each other. Like, you know, it's like 69 to, you know, 74 or something like that. It's like, you know what? That seems to be – everybody seems to be reasonably assessing it, and there doesn't seem to be something else unusual impacting the scenario. And it's when it seems to be more than 10%, or especially when we're talking about almost as much as 50%. And mm-hmm. you can – it's like, you know what, I think that something's definitely amiss. And maybe, you know what, I'm willing to say, you know, not saying that I'm not the one lone person saying Suicide Squad is my movie of the year or that's cracking my top 100 of all time. You know, I'm looking at 26 and 72. Let's split that difference. I mean, even if you give it a 50, somebody could say, hey, fine, I'll give it a 50%. Still an F. I mean, in school terms, you know,
yeah. Like, well,
hey, let's be fair. It's probably in that middle somewhere. And maybe I'd push it up and say, you know what, maybe that's where I would say, you know what, but I had fun with it. I liked certain things that pushes it up to a D or a C minus for me. And that then you were like, OK. And sometimes for a weekend of having fun with friends, a C is a good grade. So maybe maybe it's not bad that James thinks it's a C minus. You're like, but I think it's a, you know, and maybe Alexis or you like, I think it's a D or a D minus. But you know what? We're not that far apart, really.
Mm-hmm. No.
Well, I think that's a pretty. I think okay. kind of like finding the critic thing. I think that's a great way of kind of using a tool wisely. And not making Rotten Tomatoes like your false idol of whether movies are good or bad. But,
yes.
But yeah, Alexis, what were you saying?
Oh, I was just going to say, I think the real root of the issue is what we're trying to promote in our individual sites and together as Real World Theology. And that is viewing things more intentionally, being alert, being aware, having discernment while you're watching is going to help cultivate a better opinion or a better criticism or analysis of a film. Because I think a lot of times people are just like, well, let's just, we can pick out the little golden nuggets. And, you know, I do that too, trying to be positive and all that. But I think people, the audience would kind of shift their opinions and maybe even critics too, if they sort of were more open to the deeper things happening in the film and kind of were more aware and cognizant. Because a lot of people I've talked to, just like general public people coming out of movies, working at a movie theater, they didn't really think about the deeper things in the movie. It was more about the flash or whatever. And mm-hmm. I think just changing our mindset, like you were saying, entertainment is not mindless. That's the whole, our slogan, tagline.
It's our shtick.
Yeah. I think the problem isn't what people are saying or they're getting into fights. It's that individually we need to go back and question why we like this movie, what's great about it, ask ourselves questions, you know, be critical thinkers and not just criticizers, I guess, is more what needs to happen. So it needs to be an individual shift, and the individual shift will lead to a global shift. And I know that's like wishful thinking, like, oh, philosophizing. Yeah, that'll be the day when that happens. But I think that's something we need to encourage people to do, is don't just go out to a movie and just eat it and leave. Like, really think about it, ask yourself questions, even about a movie you like. Why do you like it? What is bad about it? What is good about it? You know, trying to find out what it is that really means something to you. And I guess that would shape the whole criticizing culture that we find ourselves in, and all the conflict, because, oh my gosh, I am so, I mean, I have been attacked on Twitter personally over a TV show, and it got bad. And I didn't even say anything that bad. Like, people were like, geez, that was nuts. But people ripped me to shreds. And this was before I met you guys. Like, this was like February of 2015. So I know personally just how crazy people can get, how fans are sometimes just like these rabid zombies. So I totally get it. We just need to try to be on the same page and ask each other these hard questions.
Mm. Well, I know that you are probably not incorrect in saying that it might be like almost hopeless to assume that one day, you know, because I know like you both have websites along with Real World Theology, and we're all trying to get people to watch to glorify, to recognize that entertainment's not mindless, you know, like we all have our goals to hopefully help people engage with their entertainment. And it, like I said, it does seem a little hopeless, but I would say that it's hopeless in the way that, we are still called to, evangelize to the entire world. And it's not really our goal to save everyone. I mean, it might be James's goal to save everyone, because that's a realistic goal. But, you know, it's not our goal to save everyone. It's our goal to have this truth, or have this really great idea and do what we can with the influence that we've been given. So hopefully the people that listen to this podcast, hopefully the people that read Real Cathedrals and Cinemagogue and Real World Theology and all the amazing sites out there that have kind of popped up over the last 3 or 4 years, encouraging people, is making a shift. I mean, I'm having more conversations with people about this type of thing than I ever had before. I mean, we've had 40 or 50 people on this podcast now, different guests. So, I mean, like when I started the podcast and when I started Real World Theology, I was like, well, there's like 3 people having this conversation. And, and so in like, you know, in 3 years, knowing that there's over, you know, over 50, because like we have a few people in the Facebook discussion group, there's other podcasts, et cetera, et cetera. I'm encouraged knowing that it's never going to be 100%. I don't think you need encouragement, Alexis, but that's my encouraging statement to be like, let's keep doing it. Cause I think we're all doing a pretty great job. Now that we're like an hour into the podcast, Suicide Squad.
Well, yeah, that's the question, right? Did we get anything of what we were just talking about?
Yeah. So, I'm curious. Alexis, like what is going on in Suicide Squad that you did connect with?
Like I said before, I mentioned the artistic direction I really like. I'm really into unique design on screen, great cinematography, but also just the set design and some of the colors they use. I really am drawn to stuff that has that, even, you know, it could still be a bad movie, but I could still at least say like, hey, that was really cool, eye-catching. I think people forget how much work goes into being not only the cinematographer, but the set designer and the editor, and how much intention goes into the colors they use and the way they shape things and the way they frame things. And I think just, you have to really appreciate that. It's a lot of work. So I was drawn to the aesthetic for sure. Definitely. I did like the idea of seeing bad guys, end quote, because, you know, come together. I like watching anything about an ensemble of people coming together to do something great. So that was what, you know, I connected with that. I can't say that it's something I'll watch repeatedly or that it was a really great film to me personally, but I did still connect with those aspects of it. The characters, as far as bad people trying to be good or coming together to do something good, I like that. And then, the aesthetic.
Well, I was going to say, so what is it about the fact that they're bad people that is more or this compelling at all? Why would we want to cheer for bad people? Or why would you want to cheer for bad people? Why not just be like, hey, let's just make the Avengers again. Good people.
Well, good people, there's no such thing as good and bad people, I guess, technically. I mean, I wasn't, that's just the phraseology from
the film.
Are you
saying morality is subjective?
No. I mean, there's no good and bad people. We're all bad people. I mean, as Christians, we know that we're sinners. But it's more like seeing that Avengers and a lot of other things do a good job of showing the darker side of heroes and showing where they mess up and how, yeah, they can be jerks sometimes or they have problems. And I think it's nice to see Suicide Squad at least tried to show the other side of that coin, which is, yeah, the guy in prison, like, you know, has a daughter and treats his daughter well, or, you know, somebody has the capacity to love or like loved their family and had something in their life that was, you know, worth fighting for. And I think it's kind of cool that not normally do you see that. People have become better at showing the darker side of heroes, but they haven't quite shown multifaceted villains, you know, to that extent, I guess, all the time. Sometimes they do, for sure, but it's something, yeah. It's just kind of fun to see that other side that it's a two-sided coin, I guess, short story.
Mm. Yeah, it's tough. And it's one of the things I know I wanted to see. One of the things that excited me the most about Suicide Squad was the idea that somehow in like the first 30 minutes of this film, they were going to make me care about people who had willfully chosen to do wrong, bad, or just evil acts.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that is one of the most challenging things to do. You know, it's like, how do you make Walter White in Breaking Bad someone you root for? How do you make Dexter someone you root for? Like, how do you make a person making bad decisions someone you care about? And I think it's through connection. And so it made this movie, and I had an anticipation of connection. I so wanted to see connection because I realized connection, much like James talked about earlier, is one of those things that kind of transcends like our natural tendency to group people. So once we can see Deadshot as a human being, it can become a beautiful story. Once we can see Harley Quinn as a human being instead of just like a bad person, it can become a beautiful story. And it never really connected with me on that level because I thought the way they introduced the characters was terrible and awful writing. And I just sat there through the whole thing with my face in my hand, wondering why they didn't just ask me to write it because it seems like so easy. Anyway, that tangent trail of those. So I definitely love that in films. One of my favorite films, even though, again, we could say that it's not a good film, I love the Dirty Dozen movies. The Dirty Dozen movies to me are great. A whole bunch of misfits, prisoners, people who have gone AWOL, who have shunned their units and bucked against authority, come together and form this bond, and you see them all as people while they try to do some kind of task. The Expendables, like we've already mentioned. And I don't think I got this in this movie, but I love that idea. I basically just wanted to have what you said and then talk about what I wanted to talk about. So I appreciate that. Thanks. So James, same thing. Like, since you are more positive on this film than either of us, I'm assuming that there are things that you connected with this film besides just the need to repent against, criticism.
Well, sure. You know, I think that anytime you've been into something for a long, long time and know a character, it's hard to be unbiased. Like I was 19 when Harley Quinn was created and on Batman, the animated series. Like I was right there watching it in college. I owned just about every comic they put out probably about 5-7 years ago that tapered off, but had everything that was part of the animated series universe and everywhere where that relationship gestated between she and Mr. J and kind of that whole stuff that goes on there. So to say a connection didn't have to be established. Could I, am I biased? And honestly, you go back and watch the original Batman with Keaton, I would say it's honestly pretty shallow compared to what's been done since. So but yet we all loved it. And it was because in one sense we all knew the character. You know, so there's something where I can't lie and say, right, if people are seeing this and have no connection, maybe they feel hollow. Okay, I guess I'm ruined by that because I already had a connection to seeing multiple incarnations of that character and really feel like on both hands, I was surprised how much the controversial opinion is. Having watched the animated series and probably thinking Mark Hamill is my favorite Joker, I felt like next, you know, Jack Nicholson was his own version. I think that Heath Ledger gave us a version that was very grounded in that idea of Nolan's universe of what if it truly was in real life.
Yeah.
Versus more of a comic book universe. I was prepared to hate Jared Leto. In fact, Kat and I were so prepared to dislike him, especially because we're not big fans of all that we hear about his personal life outside.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we loved it and felt like he's probably about the – as far as – having read, you know, 43 years of comics, there's a lot of Joker that is exactly like the way he portrayed that.
Yeah.
Without it, not tattooed and, you know, minus his teeth and tattoos.
Yeah.
The delivery and everything was interesting. And we actually had a good conversation, which is where we connected on this film, was why do people, especially we help out at a bunch of Comic-Cons and things, and why is this relationship of Harley and the Joker so fascinating to people, because there is her devotion to him and his oftentimes relative unapproachability. It got us to what is that? Well, I mean, in human relationships, that's really damaging and scarring, but is there something about being attracted to the inscrutable and being drawn to that? Do I actually have a category for some of that? Someone who seems so untamed and ultimately unfathomable. It's like, well, no, I have some categories for that allure, which could actually skew toward, I mean, Satan or God, depending on which way you want to go with that. And there's a fascinating line in the film where he says to her, "Would you die for me?" She says, "Yes." He said, "Oh no, even that's too easy. Would you live for me?" And I love that moment. It felt like it was straight out of a good comic book. Yeah. And it's like, that's too easy. Would you actually live for me? We started, you know, hey, yeah, to die for Christ is gain, to actually endure sometimes in this life, maybe particularly this year from comics to film to politics. Feels like to die'd be easier. You just go, you know, just go be with the man. Right. But
there's people wishing for the comet to come and take us away.
Yeah. Well, you know, as the old hymn says, the trump has resounded. So maybe the Lord will descend. No, I'm sorry. No rabbit trails.
No.
But it was just that idea of their moments together were fascinating to me. And so I connected with her and Deadshot. I didn't connect with any of the others. But I would contend when I compare other types of movies that I like in the similar genre, Fast and the Furious, I only really connected with two, maybe three of the cast in any given film. The rest all seem to just be the one dimensional buddies. And so Boomerang, all these other characters, Flag. And what was fascinating to me maybe was how in some ways they didn't connect. I understand what you're saying. And I do love a film. What was unique about this movie is here, they had the opportunity to come together, but the minute Flag says you can go, Boomerang bolts, you know, I mean, just they didn't gel. They didn't truly gel as a team, and what was offered. I mean, Waller. I'm trying to remember in the comics if I've ever seen a Waller so despicable that she would kill her own people because they didn't have clearance. That in cold blood, there were aspects of her where I said, "Well, wait a minute. This is the only alternatives to robbing banks and doing their normal villainous activity. Like there's nothing." It was very judges. Everybody was doing what was right in their own eyes, and there was no, you know, there was none of that. Who could they look to get any semblance of good? That was nothing. And it felt a little bit, honestly, even the dichotomy of this film this year. I'm sad it wasn't better or didn't catch people in a different mood.
Yeah,
but. Here we're literally talking about Amanda Waller's premises. Maybe I need to leverage the lesser of two evils. Well, I have heard that debate used in a number of categories outside movies this year.
Yeah. Yes.
When it comes to voting and pitting people against each other, I'm sad that didn't connect. Like, those are the, it's like, well, wait a minute. How do we feel about this? Is it okay, even as believers? And I think there's a conversation for believers there too. I think it's a strawman argument to say, you know, lesser of two evils is a bad thing. Is it? Like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
If I have opportunities to operate, can I leverage? Can I influence one thing over here, like Daniel in Babylon, or into? Can I influence things, Joseph under Pharaoh? Can I move things in my sphere? Maybe it's even just in my neighborhood. Can I bump into the lives and point this person A versus this person B, neither of them good, but to have some kind of outcome? Do we have those? Where is our morality around that, even as Christians? Obviously not the way Waller did it, but do we have that? Where is there perhaps some freedom or even motivation that we ought to have? There's a very curious conversation there. It's a little out of reach, but it would have been fun to have conversations about this film be more about that than the current stuff.
So that's where, like, I can lament and agree with you, James, because I mean, before I even went to see Suicide Squad, and I kind of mentioned this in expounding upon Alexis's point, there are so many things built into this premise that I am excited to talk about. And unfortunately, I think one of the staff was talking to me earlier and pointed this out, that Josh Larson, who's a Christian film critic, said that this movie was like playing a CD on shuffle. And I think that kind of captures it, because there are all these little pieces of good conversations that I want to have. That you, I mean, like, you're talking about all these great things, James. I mean, like, heck, I loved at least the first part of the scene between the Joker and Harley before he kind of pushes her off. Because he is saying, like, oh, you know, it's basically harder to live for somebody than to die. And then seeing that look in his eye, kind of like, I've actually finally found someone who is 100% honest in their desires and devotion. And he sees how, you know, that he's never going to find that again. but then they go and turn it into like a weird green, swimmy, colorful thing. And
that was the baptism, bro.
But we never stuck with any idea long enough. And none of these ideas were kind of coherently presented outside of like these little scenes. Actually, I saw another reviewer that they're kind of said that, you know, David Ayers did Fury, and so he's got this history with like almost war movies, either or like police dramas, which tend to be more from scene to scene, where they kind of meander towards a goal. Or eventually get towards a goal where they're not having to like jump right into action to handle something. And Suicide Squad seems like they should have been jumping right into action to get to a place to do something, but they kind of meander for like a third of the film, just randomly shooting people and running these little skirmishes, which doesn't really make sense for the genre, but it means that you could have kind of taken any of these scenes that you have between these characters and these beginnings of good and or great discussions that we could have about addictive relationships, or connections, or good versus evil, things like that. And you never really have those conversations because it's sporadic. Yeah. Like I said, it's like a CD on shuffle, or even worse, it's like an audiobook on shuffle, you know? It's,
that makes sense to me.
And so that's a little frustrating to me, because like I said, it's not that there wasn't anything that we shouldn't have been able to connect with. It's just that there's tons of stuff we should have been able to connect with, but we never actually had the conversation. Which is in a movie like this, probably the most frustrating thing for me. But when you bring all the pieces together and you just don't perform.
That's what I was saying earlier about setting the bar and not meeting it, and also having the expectations, you know, of having a good, like a better story, a more put together story, you know, that's kind of what I was getting at. Exactly what you just said, that it's just, there's a lot of good pieces with a lot of potential that don't really make it in the end.
Mm-hmm.
don't come together.
But we're also acknowledging the fact that it's making it enough for some people. Because, I mean, like I said, James, you're thinking about things.
Right. Well, and I don't want to overly defend it and make it, I think it was awesome. Because I think, and you know, of course my mind is loaded up with some of the stuff you read beforehand too, about the, you know, the producers getting in and maybe jiggering with the cut a little bit here and there. So it did feel like some competing tones and ideas. I mean, you had the great, I love the first third in the way it did the write-up scrawls and kind of the pause and character cards, and like that whole style kind of then disappeared. So it felt like a couple of competing styles that didn't arrive, which where I think something like Scott Pilgrim versus the World, Edgar Wright did a beautiful job of a lot of crazy.
So amazing.
But blended much more seamlessly. This was like somebody wanting to do it. Like when maybe you hate Michael Bay, but when you watch a movie where somebody's trying to imitate Michael Bay and they can't even get the shot. You know, there's not even good shot composition, which just it's like, okay, I might not like the one, but this is obviously inferior. It's like, okay, this was somebody striving for that Edgar Wright, Scott Pilgrim kind of kick-ass vibe and falling short, definitely. But I do think there's a space, like in a movie like this, and even in a comic book story, if it's trying to be Watchmen or if it's trying to be something that is landing a very philosophical idea, whether it lands or not, a movie like this or like Expendables 2, I kind of expect a shotgun blast. I think they put the ball on the tee. I think it would get weird if Sylvester Stallone or Harley Quinn started actually. Maybe you could have an Amanda Waller character. You'd have somebody bring it home. You could have a definitive point, or even the villain point out how foolish the other characters have been. That happens in some stories, and it happens well. And I'm not saying that's a bad device at all. I think sometimes if fun action movies just put intriguing ideas on the conversation tee, that sometimes that's enough.
Sometimes asking the question, I do admit, is enough. But see, I think we keep going back to the Expendables bucket. But what Expendables did is it didn't try to bring up lots of philosophical questions. It did exactly what the Dirty Dozen did. It made people that you were told were bad human, and then showed you those people in their humanity. Now, Expendables does it obviously with more explosions and stuff, but certain people have to sacrifice their life. So they're having to make choices. Almost all those choices are for brotherhood or something larger than themselves. Like I said, that represent their humanity. So you're not having 10 little discussions. No, like Stallone's not going out there and philosophizing. This isn't Creed. You know, this isn't him making some kind of statement about like his life's work. This is the Expendables. So there's only really one narrative that's going through it. And it's, you know, that connectedness, it's that brotherhood, and it's done well because I care about those characters to some level of degree. I would say that this one, sure, it's got like five or six little ideas here and there. And all it does is ask, and then it pretends to explore those questions. But like I said, you can't explore brotherhood or the bonds that you find yourself in or friendship if you don't care about the friendship. And I think it's very difficult in this film, especially outside of Deadshot, which is, and Harley, which are the only ones they really talk to you about. And even their friendship kind of seems odd or wonky or poorly written. I feel like I'm being just, you know, too critical, but like that's where I would say, sure, we can use the Expendables as like the, oh, everyone realizes this movie's ridiculous, but especially in the Expendables 2, I think they did a pretty good job of that. I mean, the dialogue's terrible, the, you know, the acting's not great, but it works. And maybe it just connected with me and it didn't connect for other people. And maybe these characters did connect with people. But it's hard for me to kind of give it a pass, saying it's cool that they just asked the questions and didn't answer them, when I think they tried to answer them and they failed. Mm-hmm. I think that's different.
I think the difference here, which maybe is, again, and this is good or bad, like, to me, though, this was, you know, to me, for someone like me and maybe others, this is episode 487 of Harley Quinn.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, we've already connected, and there's a strange dichotomy right now, even in comic book movies, right? Everybody's sick of origin stories, but then, so what if we just throw you the character, assuming that you already know them and they're already fully developed? And
But see, that's what I wanted. I wanted that, James, but they tried to give us origin stories and it wasn't very good. They so I'm sitting in the theater with Mark from Real World Theology, and we're watching this film, and all I can think about during the first 30 minutes of the film, when they're slowly kind of doing this varied kind of style introduction to specifically Deadshot and Harley and Croc, I guess, to a certain degree, I don't want this. I don't want the backstory for these guys right now. I want you to start this like Avengers, Age of Ultron. I want you to introduce these characters to me because you're showing me that they're cooler than they are bad. Like, get me on board with how cool these people are. Or I'm connecting with something that they're doing. And then we can work in little pieces of their backstory or their motivations later. Don't just tell me. But then again, after having seen the film, it's kind of odd. I put this in my review that one of the most impressive things to me was when Flag revealed that he actually had a superpower, and he was moonlighting as Captain Obvious, because all through the second half of the film, something would happen and then he would just describe it to everybody. Like, oh, she always talks to her sword because her husband was killed by that sword. And she wants to die too. Oh, really? You mean that thing I just watched and completely understood? Thanks, Captain Obvious. Or we've got the heart.
Described the entire CW.
Well, I know, but see, we've talked about that, right? This is why we tried to watch Arrow. We tried to watch Flash, but ultimately, you know, there are better things to watch, in our opinion, subjectively. Yeah.
And we don't disagree. Like I'll hand an extra star to most of the other action flicks we're talking about and referencing. Mm-hmm. I think it falls short. I think I still enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I think I'd say, and I think my aim is really it's this. Can we have a pushback for the middle ground? And I legitimately saw a review today, like this, somebody, and this is actually a critic, not just some fan online. Mm-hmm. Like this, the single worst movie experience of his entire life. And yes. I was like, really?
That's what I'm talking about. That extremism. Yeah. I'm like, yeah. Okay, really? Like,
mm-hmm.
Click.
I mean, you referenced MST3K earlier, Alexis. I mean, yeah. Come on. We've seen worse than this.
There are definitely worse. Has anyone seen Manos, the Hands of Fate? I mean, hello.
Wait, didn't we do this last year right about this time, Alexis? Didn't we all sit through Minions?
Oh, that's true.
The worst movie that I saw last year.
That was my first podcast ever, by the way. And it was like, we just got to sit there bashing Minions. It was fun.
I guess we all need a little more Lisa Simpson. My wife has a shirt that, you know, is just M-E-H, period. Meh. I mean, can we all just, if it was mediocre, can we all just say it was mediocre? And if I thought it was a little above mediocre, it's just like, no, I had fun. Like, oh, all right. Well, hey, guess what? We're not completely in totally different ballparks. I managed to enjoy myself. I found some fun things. I liked seeing certain aspects of characters I already like in certain moments. And you were bored. All right. Let's go with something else.
I think that's the thing, James. I would also beat the drum, I think, from the other side, trying to go towards the middle. And that's what I mentioned at the very, very top of the podcast. It's like the backlash to like overly negative criticism has been overly positive embracing of films. And so I can come out of Suicide Squad and say, look, I was bored. I didn't think it was made very well. There were all these missteps. But honestly, it's not even, I don't think it's even in the top five or the bottom five movies that I've seen this year. Like, I've seen worse movies than Suicide Squad. So, like, it's not the worst movie ever. But it also grates against me, much like someone who's seen it. It's grating against them for someone to say this is the worst movie experience I've ever had in my life. It's hard for me to listen to someone say this movie was great. And I'm like, no, like let's dial it back a little bit. Let's just be like, you know, this movie was pretty, like, not very good, but you enjoyed like these things in it. Like, let's be tempered. Let's find that middle ground. And so language tends to be pretty important. And it's interesting because almost any of these conversations that I have, if taken out of the global kind of everyone throwing their two cents in kind of sphere, and we talk about it on a one-to-one level, like I think you and I, James, can come to a pretty decent agreement about where the film probably was, like on a one-to-one basis. And yeah. You and Alexis, me and Alexis, all the people that we disagree with or whatever on social media, I think on a one-to-one basis, if we take the time to really listen to someone else, we find that we're saying a lot of similar things. We're not quite as far apart as we actually are, but our language would seem to indicate otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true.
So we all seem to be beating the drum for the middle ground, or at least tempered reactions.
Well, let me hear. I got a question just to test how bored or to test how much it hit you guys. And in that vein, let's try a test then. I didn't like my opinion of the first two Harry Potter films. I didn't enjoy Columbus's directing. I hadn't read the books, so I had no attachments. I was completely disinterested in it, but I was willing to go. You know, they hired the third director, Alfonso Cuarón's doing three. Mm-hmm. Went there. Man, then I got a good, in my mind, the right director attached to the material. I was enjoying it. If they actually greenlight a sequel, and it's, let's say, David Ayer gets bumped, and they try it, they bring in, you know, new screenwriter and everything, would you guys be like, do you even care about, would that at all peak? Would you just be like, oh, okay, maybe they can get it, they can smooth it out? Or just be like, oh, they should just scratch it and just be done.
No, I think I'd be open, because I think if you know a creator's work enough, you know, you don't think that they're never going to make a mistake or anything like that. But it's more, I would be open to seeing what they do and seeing if they can make it more even as far as story and character development. Yeah.
So I'm in two different worlds here. In one world, I'm in the real world theology. I'm in the real world theology, which means that no matter how bad I think a film is going to be, if it's going to be in the public conversation, I want to be in that conversation. So if they make another Suicide Squad movie, then it almost doesn't matter who's attached to it. I'm probably going to see it. For me personally, I don't really care about, based on what I saw in the first movie, or this, you know, this Suicide Squad movie, I don't think that I really care about any of these characters. And I really liked Will Smith kind of elevating the material that he was given. Because I remember even saying, like, when I was trying to think of like a favorite moment from this movie, I remember saying to myself, I don't remember what it was, but there was at least once or twice where Will Smith delivered an awful line in a way that only Will Smith can deliver and make it like land, which happened to be exactly what was missing from Independence Day Resurgence. and I was like, I really appreciated that, but I still don't really care about his character. Yeah. It would have to be someone, two things. It would have to be someone amazing. Like, they'd have to be like, you know what? Joss Whedon was so tired of Marvel, he decided to come write the next Suicide Squad movie. I would be the first person in line for that. The other thing that would likely have to happen is that David Goyer and Zack Snyder would have to have almost nothing to do with it, because they've shown me that what they think a comic book character is not something that I'm generally interested in. So, which is unfortunate, because I used to like what Goyer did, but then, like I said, he decided to start making what James you've referred to as like the not the alternate universe, but
the Elseworlds.
Yeah, the Elseworlds kind of thing. Yeah. Like how you can kind of justify the weirdness of of the Man of Steel universe. It just generally doesn't appeal to me. Actually, I mean, we did the Batman vs Superman podcast. Since then, I've seen the ultimate cut. So now I feel like I've had the best argument for Batman vs Superman being a good movie. And I was like, oh, well, it did make it better, but still not a great movie. And I never actually thought in my mind that Batman vs Superman could be a good movie until I saw Suicide Squad. And I was like, well, comparatively, Batman vs Superman was pretty good.
I don't think we're too far off, because I felt like the characters had more gravitas. I had less enjoyment walking out of the theatrical version of BVS than mm-hmm. I did with Suicide Squad. I agree too. Then the Ultimate Edition changes it a bit. But I guess that's where, you know, it's like that. Okay, well, that's a variable spectrum. I had far less desires for this to attain to a certain level. I expected it to be much more passing average fare, and so I came out less, very frustrated by all the what seemed like terrible editing and missing character moments from BVS. This felt choppy, but I at the same time my hopes for Clark Kent's character being fleshed out, it's far different from my hope for a guy who likes pink unicorns. Mm.
Yeah. Well, so this is the thing.
Oh, I agree with that. No. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I think my expectations were fairly low, because I was like, this is the DC murderverse or whatever, whatever critics want to call it. And I did not have high expectations until I realized that David Ayers was, you know, writing and directing it. And in general, with one or two exceptions, I've enjoyed David Ayer's stuff from a writing and directing point. And Fury, when it came out, I was like, oh, this is his basically audition for Suicide Squad. Because when we have an episode on Fury, I highly suggest everyone listen to it. It's a pretty great movie. Obviously some rated R content, but it's like a team of Americans who you want to root for because they're Americans, but they all do pretty terrible things that you still are rooting for them even when they're doing terrible things. I'm like, this is Suicide Squad. He's just gonna do this again. And it was so not the connective moments. Like almost every character in Fury, like you get to spend some time with. Not because they cut to some backstory or they do a cool nameplate card or anything like that, just because each one has a moment in the film where you see them as completely and utterly human and you can make a connection with them. And it makes you ask all the questions, like, would I do this in that situation or would I not?
Do we think that makes a difference? That might be too much for this podcast, but it's a fascinating idea to... I mean, if I go see my godson in a play, I think I know what he's capable of, right? Or if I go see some community theater, maybe I have friends singing in it. I know kind of what or a friend actually is directing it. Do you think the capacities also tie into that's not necessarily subjective, but if I'm going to see something by the guy that did, you know, Fast and Furious 3 versus I'm going to see the latest Spielberg, I wonder what that does to our experience. And
I think expectation has a ton to do with our overall feeling. When I went to see the most I think we all did. We all went to see the last Star Trek film. And I remember going into it, the previews were not very good. The trailers were not magnificent. And I just love Star Trek so much that I want there to be lots of Star Trek films because I want to keep watching them. But I realized that there's a good chance it wasn't going to be a home run. So I said, you know what? My expectations are so low for this film. I just needed to be good enough to get another one made. Mm-hmm. And going in with that expectation, when I came out and it was so much better than good enough, I think I liked it way more than I would have if I would have already known how good it would have been, which is, you know, a completely hypothetical situation.
Because that's not entirely. I'm trying to categorize that in my brain right now, because if I go, I legitimately had not refreshed myself on Air, which I am now. I'm gonna say, oh wait, Training Day, Fury, End of Watch. Mm-hmm. My goodness, you're not wrong. I would have expected something like they're understanding the capacities would have certainly sent me into this film anticipating a different outcome.
Well, I think it's reflective in why people have been so hard on Spielberg these past couple of years. You know, Spielberg has made some of the greatest cinematic movies, experiences in the history of cinema. And so when he makes a movie that's perfectly fine, people are like, ah, you know, it's probably the worst Spielberg film. Which, I mean,
do you think it would
have been more forgiving? He did make War Horse.
Which was beautiful. That had Tom Hiddleston in it.
That made it beautiful.
I'm curious, Mikey, what would have happened if you had gone to this movie and the understanding was it was a first-time director somebody was given a chance on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, would we naturally be? I wonder what our.
I think it would have changed the overall feeling afterwards, but it wouldn't have fixed the problems.
True.
I think we're all
trying to figure it out. I'm trying to figure this out together with culture itself. I'm in this as I'm talking about it too. It's like what. The information age, I think about how many movies have I seen not really knowing. I mean, there was a day when I would see movies not knowing who the director, the producer. I wouldn't
almost
have seen
anything, right?
I wouldn't have seen months and months of press tours with him talking about how awesome it was going to be. Like, how much of that is causing some of the problems we're discussing? It's still something I think we need to.
This unpack some of the time.
Yeah. Which is funny. And I think you've actually proven the point without, you know, we've talked more about the ramifications of Suicide Squad than Suicide Squad, which is me admitting to some degree it is forgettable. So I give you another bone, right? I mean, if there had been more things just resonating in my brain, I would have pushed them out by now. But you're right. The controversy around it is more interesting than the film itself. The film I enjoyed. But yeah, as you said, the more we talk about these things, the more we're on a similar page.
Do you have Alexis? Yeah.
Oh, it was forgettable. I mean, because by the end of the day, yesterday, I was like, oh yeah, we just saw that today. Like, you know what I mean? It was one of those moments where I wasn't like reeling and thinking about it for days. And, you know, it was just like, I had almost the events of yesterday, which were not many, by the way, totally derailed me from remembering that I had even seen it that morning. It was just, there was a lot of, because it wasn't really grounding with the characters or anything like that, it was pretty forgettable for me.
Yeah. Well,
I'm glad you clarified that you didn't have some kind of Kiefer Sutherland's 24 kind of day to make you forget. Nothing happened. So it's on
a scale of 1 to Kiefer Sutherland. No.
Yeah. On a scale of like 1 to no one uses the bathroom for 24 hours. I had the same thing. Like most, when I think about Suicide Squad, a movie that I watched at the time of this recording, what, like 4 days ago, something like that. The only thing that I can really remember is the feeling of disappointment that I had when I left. Actually, the conversation that I had with Mark walking out of the theater, making fun of, I can't even think of his character or whoever plays Flag. It's not Jack Courtney. It's the other guy, Joel Kinnaman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Our conversation about how bad of an actor he was is more memorable than anything that actually happened in the film. which to me speaks to the ultimate disappointment. I mean, but this is, and to be clear, this isn't just about Suicide Squad. I've talked about 2016 so far being generally a letdown as far as like films that I've really enjoyed. And I hope it's not because I'm becoming a curmudgeon or too much of a critic to really just enjoy a film. But, I think especially after last year was like one of the most amazing years in film that I've got to be a part of in a long time. But there's so many films that I've seen this year that I watched, and then 3 or 4 days later, I'm just like, yeah, I mean, some things happened and it was all right. And I hope the second half of this year changes that. Because I enjoy good films.
I think this film had enough. I mean, you obviously didn't like the weird color paint scenes and the other acid baths and other things in this film. I think the reason that my wife and I will probably throw this in every once in a while, although on a much lesser degree, is there were moments like this. Moments do fascinate us, and moments of the visuals, mm-hmm. like Alexis was talking about. In fact, we're about to go over to a friend's house and introduce them to Crimson Peak. Not saying that I think that's a far better film than Suicide Squad. I also think it had flaws for mm-hmm. certain. But the costuming and the set design and everything were so beautiful to behold that that we own it and have we've probably been revisiting it. She more than I, like, probably watched it five or six times in the last year, just because visually it is fascinating. And so I think some people, like, there is enjoyment to be had, like you were talking about, Alexis, just with set design and other, there are things to appreciate. Whereas I'm not going to completely erase or stupidly defend bad editing, what seemed like a discombobulated script and probably some producer tampering on this film.
Well, we have been talking for quite a while, and I have actually enjoyed a lot of this. It's the best conversation about Suicide Squad I've had in 4 days. But like I said, we're getting to that point where we probably need to start winding down. So, kind of final thoughts, Alexis, you know, if there's something that we didn't mention that was just so ridiculous, you have to kind of talk about how ridiculous it is, or something you really did like that you want to mention, a favorite moment, or just any, like I said, anything else. What do you got? Final thought.
Oh gosh. Well, I guess I want to throw in that the Joker character, I thought he was better than I expected, because I can't stand Jared Leto myself either. But here. I think they should have just toned it down a little bit, because I liked the moments with him and Harley, but then moments where he was by himself sometimes or with doing other things, he was just like off the wall, and not in a cool way, like not in a Joker way. It was just kind of, I felt like it was overkill or over the top too much, which seems like a weird criticism of the Joker. Yeah. But there does come a point where it's like, it feels like you're trying too hard to achieve Jokerness, I guess. So it's like, just tone it down a little. Because, yeah, I did appreciate his portrayal of the character, but I thought it was just a little too over the top. So that was just another side note to throw in. But no other final thoughts, because, yeah, I forgot it all. So,
well, it was really weird. I wanted to like his Joker, but for some reason, I think it's because the way his hair was, maybe. All I could see was what Angel Face from Fight Club. It just, that's all it looked like to me. So James, final thoughts. What did we miss? What did we not point out was awesome or terrible?
I think we've covered just about everything. I think there's another interesting conversation to be had at some point. I saw an article the other day, people were complaining about, what was Enchantress's motivation? And you know what? I'm not sure. I've heard that about Apocalypse this year. I've heard this about the Red Skull being the weakest character in the Marvel Universe. I find myself wondering, well, what exactly was Sauron's motivation again in Lord of the Rings? What exactly was the big death ball in the Fifth Element? We've enjoyed movies where literally, like in the Neverending Story, the villain is literally nothing. can And I love the way that a film like this could, although it didn't do it as it should have, deal with the fact that villains are human too. Good guys usually have a bit of gray, various shades in those things. But is there a place for stories where there is just unmitigated and unabashed evil for evil's sake? And have we lost that ability to have? Can we not just like there is a villain who literally wants to be worshipped, wants to destroy most of the world and control what's left of it? Is there no room for Dr. Doom? Now, you know, like what does that say about us culturally if we don't think that there is, that he exists, if not in a human, then in some sort of ultimate villain? Like there's, I have a category for that. So I like story. I'm not opposed to that. I'm actually getting a little tired of the, you know, it's all because, you know, it's poor Loki and his daddy issues and like every villain, every villain. I have to sympathize with every kid. Can we just have a Hitler? Is that okay sometimes? I'm curious to see that conversation come out because we sort of changed the landscape of villains. And now there's a strange desire to have every villain be able to understand, which quite frankly, if I understand the Joker, they've probably written him incorrectly.
We've had a very similar.
We should do a part two about that.
We've had similar conversations about that, talking about good guys who are just good because they're good, like in the world of the anti-hero. Like, why do we all love Captain America when it seems like we can't? You know, why are lots of people upset that Superman, this person who should be Captain America-esque, is like in this weird, morally conflicted, dark and gritty world? Why can't he just be good because it's the right thing to do, and his bad guys be bad because it's the bad thing to do? I think that's actually one
the world burn.
Yeah, I honestly think that's one of my biggest criticisms against the new iteration of Superman. I never really liked the Avengers or Captain America all that much until I finally saw these Marvel movies, and Captain America was the hero that I wanted. the hero that Superman always has filled for people. Why I think most people fall in love with Superman, and he's so many people's favorite hero. villain wise, that's the, you know, that's just the flip side of the coin, right? Like, why do people love Star Wars so much? Why is the Empire just evil? Just because they're evil? Because evil things are evil, and the bad force is bad, and the good force is good. You know, dark light, bad good. I think people can connect with that, and it's probably one of the reasons that, you know, The Force Awakens, though, you know, not problem free, still was okay for people. Sometimes it's okay to be bad, or just have a bad guy. But that would be a whole separate podcast. I'm just trying to agree with you in my long-winded, like to hear my own voice kind of way.
So stay tuned to the podcast about how we should or can have narratives that are extremely polarized while having conversation that isn't.
Oh gosh, I'm gonna do a little stretch, and bringing it home. So, we have had quite the conversation about a film that has started quite a number of conversations, and yet we're still going to open ourselves up for more. By doing that, going to our Facebook discussion group and having more conversations there, hopefully all finding the humanity in the person on the other side of the computer screen, and having tempered and realistic conversations with them. But if you want to specifically interact with Alexis or James, which I know you do because you're tired of listening to me, then Alexis, how can people follow your work and have conversations with you?
Oh, cool. Well, definitely Twitter. It's probably what I use the most for that kind of stuff. I talk about film, TV, work, all that kind of thing. And that's my handle's @PhoenicianRises. And then also on Facebook, I have a page for my site, Real Cathedral, and then the actual website, realcathedral.net, which has all those links.
Nice. So make sure you're following Alexis there and bothering her about her hatred of critics. and the same thing for James at places like
Well, Facebook's usually where I traffic, so you can go to facebook.com/cinemagogue, G-O-G-U-E, after once you spell cinema. Or just look up James Harleman on Cinemagogue, so on the Facebook as well, and cinemagogue.com is the website.
And your heavily used Twitter accounts.
Yeah.
So visit their sites. You can follow me at Fizzification on Twitter, on Fizzer. Oh, that'd have been great. You can tell we've been talking for a while. Fizzification on Twitter. Join the Facebook discussion group, the Real World Theology Facebook discussion group. Subscribe to this podcast. Go to our site, realworldtheology.com. Find, you know, the notes for this podcast and all kinds of other great episodes. We've done Fury. We've done Minions. We did one on Crimson Peak. Lots of movies that we've mentioned here on this episode. We have episodes for with other great guests having great conversations. So great conversations don't happen without great guests. So please, please, please follow their stuff. You can find it at the website. Interact with them. Tell them that you love the points they made, the conversations that they had. Follow them if they're followable. Cinemagogue, Real Cathedrals, etc., all that stuff. Because we're thankful for them. We're also thankful for you, the listeners, because you have chosen to take part of your week to spend with us in what looks to be a very long conversation. So thank you so much for that. There's lots of great podcasts out there, and you've chosen to spend some of your time with us. Like I said, I can't tell you how grateful I am for that. So thank you, Alexis. Thank you, James. Thank you, listeners. And until next episode, guys, remember that story is powerful and entertainment is not mindless. Bye-bye.
This podcast has been a Real World Theology production. For more information, check out realworldtheology.com. And thanks for listening.
Now this is podcasting. Woo!
He's back.
I am back. Are y'all best friends now?
Oh, yeah. Sure. Just talking about the weather.